What if I told you that one of today's most beloved houseplants contains a mystery that stretches across centuries and continents? A plant boasting some of the most vibrant and striking foliage imaginable, yet its tale begins long before it ever graced a Victorian greenhouse. Which plant? The begonia. And its journey from ancient forests to your very own windowsill is far more intricate than you might suspect. Welcome to the History of Plants, I'm Megan Brame. Today we're diving into the remarkable story of the begonia, covering its ancient origins, witnessing its dramatic rise to Victorian fame, and unraveling enduring mysteries that still shroud this fascinating collection of plants. Part 1, an ancient puzzle. You might be surprised to know this, but begonias are ancient. Their story stretches back millions of years. In Alabama, researchers unearthed fossil evidence of a begonia fruit dating back to the Pliocene era, specifically between 5.3 and 2.6 million years ago. To really put that in perspective, it's believed that the first humans didn't set foot on the American continent until around 20,000 to 16,000 years ago. So that means that begonias were flourishing in North America for millennia before humans ever arrived. I don't know about you, but to me that's a really staggering thought, and it really sets the stage for how deep the begonia story goes. But now we have to fast forward millions of years because, well, we don't have lots of info about what begonias were up to until much later, when we find the first written hints of begonias in human history coming from 14th century China. Historical records from that time contain descriptions of plants that botanists believe are early begonias. In the writings, there's legend of a begonia magically springing from the earth from the tears of a heartbroken maiden. If the botanical historians are right, begonias were known and perhaps even integrated into cultural stories of Chinese people long before Europeans ever took notice. Then, before European explorers arrived in the Americas, we find another piece of the puzzle. Francisco Hernandez, a Spanish physician, first documented them in the 17th century in his posthumously published text, whose title I would absolutely butcher if I tried in Latin, so instead I'll use the English translation. Inventory of Medical Items from New Spain, or History of Mexican Plants, Animals, and Minerals. This marked the first published account of begonias in the Western world and documented knowledge that was already present within the indigenous communities of the Americas, revealing the plants were well known and utilized long before European documentation. Now, in past episodes, I've covered the way different cultures have used different plants. So you might be wondering, what did indigenous communities in the Americas and Asia know about begonias? Presumably, they were surrounded by these plants, or at least intimately familiar with their local flora enough to know what these plants were. So did they use them for medicine? Were they used in rituals? Did they have their own legends and stories about them? And the truth is, we don't know. We just don't know for sure. Colonization, the loss of traditional knowledge, and the lack of written records have created a huge gap in the begonia story. We can speculate, we can guess, but we are missing crucial pieces of the puzzle. It's a really humbling thought, isn't it? There's so much we don't know, and so much we might never know. To me, that's frustrating, and is yet another reminder of how much history we've lost. What we do know is that the begonia story is far more richer and complex than the European narrative, which, let's be honest, often dominates our understanding. But don't get me wrong, though. I am so thankful for the records that we've got, including the major works of a well-connected French friar who gave us the understanding of begonias as we know them today. Part 2, the French botanist. So, how did the begonia finally make its grand entrance into the official European botanical records? The answer lies with a remarkable figure, Charles Plumier, a Minim friar and botanist with some very important royal connections. In the late 17th century, Plumier, driven by an insatiable curiosity of the natural world, embarked on 3 extraordinary expeditions to the Caribbean islands. Obviously, these weren't just personal adventures. He was acting on behalf of King Louis XIV, tasked with documenting the exotic flora and fauna of these distant lands. Plumier's passion for plants was ignited by the work of Italian botanists and quickly earned him the moniker the King's Botanist. He was far from a mere amateur. He was a serious scientist, meticulous in his observations and driven by a genuine thirst for knowledge. Just kind of like set the stage in your head though, like imagine a friar venturing into these uncharted territories at the behest of a king an ocean away, all in the pursuit of botanical discovery. In my head, it's like the Disney version of Friar Tuck, but I'm sure that's probably not very historically accurate. Now, during these royal expeditions, Plumier encountered the begonia. And as we talked about earlier, he obviously wasn't the first to lay eyes on these plants, but his work was undeniably significant. He didn't just collect specimens, he meticulously described and illustrated the begonias he found, bringing them to the attention of the European scientific community in a way that had never been done before. He was documenting, classifying, contributing to the growing body of botanical knowledge, and laying the groundwork for how we understood these plants today. And he's also where we get the name begonia from. Plumier, in a gesture of appreciation, named the genus after Michel Begon, a French official and enthusiastic patron of botany. So the name we use today for these beloved plants is a direct result of the connection between a dedicated botanist, a curious monarch, and a generous supporter of the sciences. However, there's a fascinating twist to this tale. Despite Plumier's meticulous documentation and naming of the begonias, and despite bringing them to the attention of the scientific community in Europe, these plants didn't immediately become a sensation. Their journey to widespread popularity would take a different and somewhat unexpected path. Part 3, the begonia's bad marketing. So here's the puzzle. For a plant with such a striking beauty, the begonia remained surprisingly understated for a really long time. The 18th and early 19th centuries saw a trickle of begonias into European gardens, but there was no grand debut. There was no horticultural fanfare. It's sort of like a blockbuster movie with a terrible trailer. The potential is there, but the hype just wasn't. Also, think about the competition at the time. Elegant, refined plants were the zeitgeist of the garden world. Camellias with their flawless rose-like blooms were the darlings of the elite, and rhododendrons with their vibrant, show-stopping displays were everywhere. And let's not forget the undisputed headliner, the rose, and its countless star-studded varieties. These were the plants stealing the spotlight and capturing the hearts and wallets of the discerning plant collectors. To give you a quick little background about me, my career was mostly in marketing before I became a writer, and so I kind of think of this with a marketing lens. Perhaps the begonia's marketing team, for lack of a better phrase, was just not up to the task. These plants were still relatively rare and struggling with limited distribution, since getting live specimens from the Caribbean to Europe in the 17th centuries was pretty much a logistical nightmare. The journey was long, the conditions were harsh, and these plants were delicate. I think of it like trying to launch a product with a broken supply chain. The demand might be there, but the product just isn't reaching the shelves. Or perhaps the brand, if you will, itself needed a makeover. Keep in mind that the stunning cultivars we have today were still far in the future, so maybe the original begonias, though they had very unique foliage, had understated blooms and simply didn't resonate with the prevailing aesthetic trends of the time. Whatever the reason, the begonias' early years in Europe were, in my head, a serious marketing blunder. They were there and they were quietly admired by a select few, but they weren't the headliners or the must-have plants. They were simply just waning in the few gardens that had them, waiting for their moment to break through. But that moment was coming. And when it arrived, it would be a box office smash. Part 4, enter the Victorians. In 1804, the begonia's fortunes began to shift to a rather intriguing figure, William Kerr. Sent by London's Kew Gardens to China, Kerr had what many would consider a dream job. He was the first professional plant collector in this exotic land. For 8 years, he navigated the challenges of limited access, confined mostly to trading ports. Yet, even within these restrictions, Kerr introduced a botanical treasure trove that still graces our gardens today. Nandina, Chinese juniper, tiger lilies, and the aptly named Caria japonica. He was, in essence, a botanical rock star. But Kerr's story had a fascinating and, shall we say, off-script element. While he was busy cataloging new plant species, rumors swirled that he also had developed a taste for a certain type of botanical pursuit, shall we say. Chinese officials hinted at his frequent visits to the opium dens of the region. To give Kerr a little bit of grace here, the truth, of course, remains shrouded in mystery, but it adds an undeniable layer of intrigue to our plant hunter. This image of a man exploring faraway lands, immersed in the world of plants, while also indulging in, let's just say he wasn't solely focused on begonias. But to give Kerr a little bit of leeway, one thing I want to point out about the timeline that I think gives some context is that Kerr's time in China coincided with a period of with increasing trade tensions between China and Western powers, the insatiable British appetite for tea and the efforts to balance the resulting trade deficit were beginning to escalate. And while the full-blown opium wars were still decades away, the seeds of conflict were being sown, and they were creating a complex and often volatile environment for foreign traders and explorers like Kerr. So he may have been as adventurous as the stories say, or it could have been a type of propaganda, for lack of a better word, to show the Chinese and probably other trading partners how wanton these British were. But amidst these other pursuits, Kerr made a pivotal contribution to the begonia story, the introduction of Begonia evansiana to Europe. This wasn't just another pretty face. Begonia evansiana was a game changer. It was relatively easy to cultivate, ensuring its survival during the arduous journey back to Europe, and its success in European gardens. But more importantly, it possessed desirable traits that made it a plant breeder's dream. Its vigor and willingness to hybridize with other begonia species opened the floodgates to a wave of new cultivars, laying the groundwork for the plant's future stardom. Fast forward a bit to 1837, right at the dawn of the Victorian era, and a seismic shift in horticultural tastes is taking place. And suddenly, begonias were the talk of the town. Gardening magazines sang their praises, plant lovers clamored for them, and plant breeders reveled in the possibilities. But what ignited this Victorian begonia craze? The answer is like one of those perfect moments where everything comes together just so and sets off a spark that ignites a fire. Victorians, obsessed with the exotic and the novel, found their desires perfectly met in the begonia. Its vibrant colors, unusual forms, and endless variety of hybrids delivered surprise after surprise. The Rex begonias, with their mesmerizing foliage, were a sensation. And of course, there was the sheer beauty of the begonia. Their flowers, but especially their leaves, particularly in the Rex types, were works of art, showcasing a stunning array of colors, textures, and patterns even then. Residential greenhouses, which were symbols of wealth and horticultural prowess, became showcases for these botanical treasures. Just like imagine these greenhouses filled with a kaleidoscope of begonias, consequently being a testament to the owner's taste and affluence. The enduring popularity of Begonia erythrophylla, or the easier to say beefsteak begonia, recognized by the American Begonia Society as the oldest cultivated begonia still in existence, is a living piece of botanical history and stands as a testament to the begonia's Victorian heyday. As the era progressed, hardy begonias began to grace public gardens and parks, bringing their beauty to a wider audience. The begonia's Victorian triumph was a confluence of factors: the allure of the exotic, the thrill of novelty, the appreciation of beauty, the rise of the residential greenhouse, and the groundwork laid by William Kerr. It was a perfect moment for the begonia to shine. Yet, even during this explosion of popularity, mysteries remain. Where did these diverse begonias originate, and how did they diversify so rapidly? The begonia story was far from over, and more surprises were yet to unfold. Part 5, Begonias Today and Tomorrow. So, the Victorians went totally begonia crazy, and plant breeders had a field day making all sorts of new varieties. But the begonia story didn't stop there. In the 20th and 21st centuries, these plants have gone global, and you see them everywhere. Homes, gardens, fancy resorts. They're just so versatile and so pretty. It's no wonder that people love them so much. And breeders are still at it, making even more amazing new types. The American Begonia Society thinks there have been over 20,000 different kinds of begonias, which is crazy. Though, sadly, some of them have disappeared over time. But now, thanks to the internet, it is even easier for begonia lovers to connect. Online groups share tips, trade plants, and work together to save rare types. It's like a big worldwide begonia club. But still, some varieties do get lost, which is a bummer. And while the begonias we grow at home are doing great, the wild ones are having a tough time thanks to deforestation and climate change. And they are the particularly important ones because there is still so much we don't know about these plants. We've figured out a lot of their history and how they're bred, but their true origins and path of evolution are still parts of the puzzle that are missing. But scientists have begun to dig into their genes and try to find the answers. A 2023 study began tracing the begonia family tree by mapping genomes from 6 different species. The more we dive into this world, the more we are bound to find. And that brings us to the end of our begonia adventure for now. from before humans ever stepped foot in North America to today, the begonia story is full of surprises, mysteries, and a bit of that old-timey Victorian charm. It's a plant that has been making people happy for ages, and its story is still being written. I'm Megan Brame. Thank you for joining me on another episode of The History of Plants. Jump into the commentary episode on Patreon, or check out the video version of this episode on my YouTube channel, Plantrums. Until next time, greenies, stay curious, and don't forget to flourish.